speaker for the evening, Shirley M. from Escondido.
I'm Shirley, and I'm an alcoholic. This is incredible. I am taking this podium and this box with me. Perfect. I've been places speaking where I'm like peeking over here to try to let some, you know, so I can see the audience. I have gotten so short in this program. Oh, gosh. I want to thank Terry for asking me to come down. This is a great meeting. I see a couple rejects from La Jolla here tonight, so you... You're a success, and I enjoyed your 10-minute pitch. Thank you. Anyway, I'm really glad to be here. I wonder where I think I'm going to start. Let's see, how about five more? Anyway, I'm going to start. Oh, and I met Carol. Carol? Yes, who has 30 years of sobriety. Next Wednesday is my birthday, September 26th, and I got sober in 1971, and I'll have 36 years. Now, isn't that impressive? So, that's very impressive to me. And when Carol and I got sober, we were talking about this. I mean, 30 is like no big deal anymore. When I got sober, 15, 20 was like, wow. Some really old mean guy in my meeting was 25, you know, and I hated him because he hated me. Because he said one night in the meeting, we have to listen to her whine again tonight. I had absolutely no gratitude when I got sober, you know. And he talked about this guy. He says, I took a guy out to a meeting one night, and he was whining, and he said, I clamped my hand over his mouth, and I took his nose, and he said, this guy's just flailing all over the place, and I threw him away and let him breathe, and I said, now you're grateful for something. Oh, my God. Is that what they're going to do to you here? But now there are people stay sober. Welcome, newcomer. You can get old here. I mean, it's a hell of a deal. I'd never have lived this long. I was not young when I got sober, obviously. I mean, but I'm not old. My heart was a hell of a lot older, and my soul and my spirit was old at the 39 I was when I got here. And in November, I'll be 76, and my heart and my soul are the young that you've given to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And for that, I am very grateful. For that, and Ken, my husband, thank you for him, too. I had to work awfully hard to get him, though. It was I was thinking tonight, I started drinking when I was 15, and I'll be darned if I used to know where I got my booze. I can't remember anymore, but it really doesn't matter. But I, as a young person, and, you know, my story just can't change in some ways, Joe, but as a young person, I was just so self-obsessed. And it manifested itself in sweaty armpits. I mean, not just like, it was like a football player. You know, I'd be sweat from the elbows to the waist. You know, and you could see it. You know, and as a young teenager, it's not cool. It is just, and I would have these squishy little pits, you know. And my sister, I have a sister who's 10 years older than I am. She's really tall. And she introduced me to shields. You know, you used to wear shields in your dress. And the shield, you could wring them out. And this part would be dry, and I'd be wet down here and down here, you know. And when I took a drink of alcohol, my armpits dried up. And honest to God, I mean, it is a memory that I'll have all my life, you know, that I was one among many for once, you know. And alcohol did something for me. It did a lot of other things for me throughout the 23 years that I drank. But that was number one. And, you know, I thought I had a lot of fun with alcohol. You know, crazy things happened when we drank. And, you know, not as crazy as some of you, but, you know, crazy things happened when you're in high school and college, you know. And you do things that jeopardize other people's property and themselves, you know. But I just thought I was having a wonderful time. And when I was 21, I married the guy I had met when I was 16. And, you know, it seemed I just thought I was just terribly in love with this person, you know. And so we got married, and I got so drunk on my wedding night, you know, he was pretty disappointed. But I mean, I had a wonderful time at all those little bars we stopped at on the way up the coast. I was born and raised in Santa Monica, so I'm native to the coast. I live inland now, and it's a culture shock, but it's sort of close. And we, you know, I was neurotic before I got married. This was, you know, some of the reasons that I drank. I had developed this lump in my throat, and I was constantly trying to get rid of it, you know. And on our honeymoon, I had set this little paper bag up, and I had a box of Kleenex, you know. And we'd be driving along in this little roadster with, you know, no seatbelts or anything. You'd cuddle up next to him, and I was always like. Fitting, you know, to get rid of my lump. And I just couldn't get rid of it. Finally, when we got back from the honeymoon, I went to an ENT man, and he said that I probably was eating my stomach away by trying to get rid of all my stomach juices all the time. But I never got rid of the lump. The lump came, I found later, with the drinking. When I stopped drinking, the lump went away. You know, I had all sorts of neurotic tendencies like that, you know, and they got, and interfered in my relationship with this first husband. I was afraid of everything. I'm afraid of altitude. Well, I was. And I had gone to Idaho at one time with my mother and her sister, we'd gone up to, I don't know, maybe 8,000 feet or something like that, and her sister had the vapors or whatever it is, and I thought she was going to die, you know, and she thought she was going to die, and we had to all drive back down the mountain so Aunt Maud wouldn't die. And so I knew that I probably was like Aunt Maud. And so, well, on our honeymoon, we were going to drive up to Tahoe, and I started watching the elevation signs, you know, and I did pretty good up to 4,000 feet. And then I didn't do well. And I started this thing that was sort of to be a routine. And this, as you won't be surprised to know, a marriage that only lasted 17 years. You don't. And I threw a fit. And I can't go. I can't do it. You can't, you know, I mean, you have to turn around now. I can't go. I can't do it. I'm going to, and I, and this poor guy made the first, you know, mistake of our relationship. He turned the car down around, and we went back down the hill. And that I was able to manipulate him in all those years until, and that's, you know, you don't make a good, solid relationship trying to manipulate somebody to have your own way all the time. And I mean, I had to have my own way about just about everything. I didn't have any idea I was that kind of a person. And Jill, you have some steps here that are very revealing. I don't see a list of them. They're in that book. I don't see one. Oh, that's back there. I need to look at that book and read that list of steps. It's just incredible what they want you to do here to get well. So my husband went to college and up in San Luis Obispo, and I worked at the college, and it was a really cool time. You know, it was right after the Korean War, and a lot of married students up there, and we had a lot of friends, and a whole bunch of us had babies when the guys were seniors. You know, we didn't do a lot of drinking in college. I'd done a lot of drinking before I got married, and didn't drink quite so much, but during those 4 years, but a lot of us had babies. We'd had one or two good parties along the way. And then we came back to, actually we went back east for a while, and then we settled back down in Santa Monica. And in 3.5 years, I had 3 babies. And I know people have babies faster than that, but don't tell me. I don't want to know. It was just... I'm the one that had 3 and 3.5 years. I want to give that martyrdom up, you know. But it was really, I was overwhelmed. I would not at the time have admitted that, but I was totally overwhelmed. You know, I loved the little babies, and but they made, I didn't like all the noise. I didn't like it when they started crawling, they had to chase. I didn't like when they pulled on you and wanted things to do, and So as soon as this guy got home, I you know, turned him over, and I drank in the den, you know, and I mean, it was a hard day. And I told on what all the little three, 4 and 5 year olds were due. I reported them to their dad every night, you know. I mean, just was really a good mom. And so, of course, I had another one, and that was going to fix everything, and and of course it didn't, and I just drank more. And I remember we had next-door neighbors who didn't have children, and they'd had this wonderful marriage, and they thought, well, we'll have one, and they were both school teachers, and he had said one night at a party where I was trying to relax, you know, how what stress children put on marriage, and I was just totally offended by that stress. That's what marriage is for, having children, you know. And they're wonderful to have, you know. They're blessings in our life, you know. I mean, I just... So we had another one, and my drinking escalated, you know, and I did have kids that all had hearing problems, you know. They... just couldn't talk to them. I had to yell at them and talk to them sort of loud because they never got the message. On the first message, you never could remember what they were supposed to do. I'd write notes for them, put them up on the refrigerator. Well, they couldn't read yet. You know, so. No, that's not true. That's an exaggeration. That came later. All the way that I was, all the drinking that I did, all the running around that I did, I don't know if this guy, I loved him when we got married. I hoped he loved me. I thought it was forever. And then pretty soon I was thinking, oh, for God's sakes, is this forever? But I didn't know how to create a relationship. And I demanded too much of him. I needed too much emotional care. Our book talks about that, you know. We become so can become so dependent on those people around us that we just actually suck the life out of them and out of the relationship, and that's exactly what I did. And so I got pregnant again. And by now, we had taken up tennis, and I'd been a tennis player as a young person, and I look good in a tennis skirt. I have good legs, and I had sort of good boobs, and so I look good in a tennis outfit, and I knew about a racket and the ball too, so you know I had it made. But my husband looked really weird on a tennis. He'd never been on a tennis court. He played like Groucho Marx, you know. I told him once to bend his knee when he would hit the ball, and he just never got up again. You know, he just sort of ran around like that. So I got pregnant, and I had spinal surgery when I was about 14 years old. I had a fusion in my lower back, and having children was becoming really very painful and very stressful. And not long after I started drinking, probably a year or so after I started drinking, my mother started drinking. And my mother died of her drinking when this fourth child was about a year old. And she died propped up in a hospital of a wet brain. And I didn't have anything going with my mother. My mother didn't have much going with me either. She loved my sister, but I was sort of my father's child who died when I was 11. And I wasn't very close to my mother. And when I got pregnant the fourth time, and she was out at our house, and I don't know, she used to drive from Santa Monica to San Fernando Valley through Topanga Canyon drunk, you know, and she'd drive up to the curb and go boing, you know, curb and stop her. Well, I told her I was pregnant, and she says, "Are you trying to embarrass me? What are you, a baby factory?" I'm thinking, I am a baby factory. And, you know, that's the kind of relationship we had. So, I mean, I just wasn't really close to my mother. And my mother died of this disease, propped up in a sanitarium in Santa Monica. And something happened to me after that, and I sort of had like a breakdown, and I wound up in a psychiatrist's office, you know. And I tried to tell him how much I was drinking. And he says, "Don't worry about it. When you get through this, when your problems are over, you won't drink so much." And I'm like, okay. Yeah. Of course, my psychiatrist is up on the fifth floor. And I couldn't get in the elevator. I had to walk up the five flights to get to him because I was so afraid of everything. I was afraid of the elevator. When the elevator door closed, I mean, I'm in there all alone with my head, you know. I mean, jeez, I couldn't do that. And while my husband had been in college, this was like several years before, I had awakened one night, you know, and I'd done this, you know, and I thought my muscles were relaxing, and actually I turned out to keep doing this, you know, and the next day I went to a doctor and I'd had an anxiety attack, and I got some medication that helped me not have anxiety attacks, and so I sort of used those things along the way too, and I never became physically addicted to that type of stuff, but I never let it out of my sight either, and I I was so afraid of those anxiety attacks, I carried it for 3 years in my purse in Alcoholics Anonymous in case your God couldn't handle my anxiety attacks. So this husband didn't like the psychiatrist, and you know, it wasn't working out. We weren't having any relationships anymore. And when I had that fifth pregnancy, a psychiatrist and an orthopedist said that should be terminated, and it was. And you know, they tied my tubes, and that was that. And I kept playing tennis, and I decided to take lessons, and I liked the coach, and he liked me a lot, and so we just started this relationship in the back seat of his car up in some property. And my husband and I and my mother, we own some property up in the Santa Monica Mountains that had a really nice view. And so we had this relationship up there. And there used to be a fire watch helicopter that would come by every day. Saw a couple little bare butts, I think, but not sure. Anyway, you know, I mean, the addition of this relationship sort of took my mind off of my husband. I say I was pretty happy. I mean, like, I was the happiest I'd been in years, you know? And I'd come down out of the mountain just clicking my rings on the steering wheel, you know, just feeling great. My husband and I weren't playing tennis together anymore. He was playing with my best friend because she didn't like playing with her husband. I think you're ahead of me here. And you're on the right track. My best friend and her husband separated, and my husband and I had a terrible fight, and my husband and I separated. And like the dutiful woman I am, though, I was washing the bathroom for the kids one day when I realized that these two were having a relationship off the courts, too. And, of course, now I'm offended. I'd let my relationship go. Well, I think I let it go after I found out they had a relationship because I thought, oh, I better try. You know, oh, whatever. It just, 2 weeks after the divorce, they got married. I mean, one week. One, not two, one. How did I make that mistake? I know that fact very well. And I'm telling you, I knew exactly what a resentment was when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But for the next two and a half years, I settled into doing what I knew would take care of me, and that was to drink. It didn't take care of those kids, but it took care of me. And I didn't care. I didn't care. I wasn't concerned about their welfare. My oldest daughter is a very mature person. And at around five, we both figured out that she was more mature than I was. And at 11, she took on her siblings, a brother, a sister, and another brother. And she raised those kids for the next 2.5 years. And I drank. And I became crazier and crazier. You know, I couldn't, now I could hardly drive. I couldn't make left-hand turns in my own town. You know, there you are sitting quietly again, except up here, and it just goes off, you know, and all. And I was just like crazy. And I'd stop going to the psychiatrist because he wasn't doing me any good, and I just drank. And I had an ex-relative, my husband's cousin, and he started calling me, and I'd been to a party. I didn't think I'd been drinking hardly at all, and he started calling me, telling me he'd come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was helping him. It was helping him with his drinking and helping him with a divorce, and I'm like there with my new gallon of wine. I'm not going anywhere. And I don't know how long he did that. And before we had this incident in the house with my kids, had a lot of animals, snakes, guinea pigs, dogs, and this damn mama kitty who just hated me. And she would follow me around the house, and she would like meow 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 at me, you know, and I'm like, and I'd put my foot between her two front paws, and I'd rock her, and I'd whip her across the room, you know. Cats fly, you know, and they land on all their feet, and she'd come back to me, and she'd meow, 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 you know, and I just hated her, and I told the kids I'm getting rid of her. And so I put her in the car with her kittens and took her to the vet, and he liked the kittens. He wouldn't take the cats, so in this car, I had to take my ex-sister-in-law with me because I couldn't drive that far by myself. And I've got this damn cat in the car, and I'm driving through Woodland Hills, you know, and I pulled over the curb and I opened up the door and I threw that cat out, you know, and I went on home and I go, Bet took the cats, you know. And I don't know any timing in here. It's either weeks or a couple months. I don't know. But Mike kept calling me, and you know, things kept getting worse. And one night, I'd had my two-a-day Sunday drunks, you know, and I'd gone into the bathroom, and I never smiled. I had a little wrinkle in my forehead here. And I used to go to my bathroom, and I'd pull out that magnifying mirror, and I'd look in there, and I'd think, that SOV. It's his fault I have that wrinkle in my forehead. And this night, I'm looking in the mirror, and I'm scowling again, you know, and I saw myself from the inside out. I saw all the meanness and the anger and the self-pity and the martyrdom. I came by those things legally from my mother. And I saw those things in me, and I made a call. And I asked Mike to take me to a meeting. It was actually his brother-in-law I called, and he got him the message, and Mike said, you know, just don't drink on Monday. And I'm a daily drinker, you know, but I didn't drink that Monday. I threw out the rest of what I had. I didn't keep too much in the house. I always kept about that much in the bottle from the night before, just in case. But I had to drink everything I had. And Mike came and he took me to a meeting, and I heard two women. I went to a meeting, the Venice Circle. It's not there anymore, but that was on a Monday night, September 26, 1971. And two women spoke. And they'd been primed before I got there, and they were told what to say, you know. They talked about how when they took a shower and got out of the shower, that before they could even dry off and get their clothes on, they'd be perspiring beer. You know, they could smell the booze coming out of them again. They talked about, you know, being in a room full of people all by themselves. I never went to a room full of people, however. If I tried that, I went to church a couple times. I sat in the way in the back, and somebody tried to get behind me. I couldn't do it anymore, you know. I was just too paranoid. And so I had to leave. But they talked about feelings. They didn't talk about what they drank or how much they drank. They talked about what it did to them. And that's what I related to. That's what I've always related to. I've never been in jail, except in my mind, except in my own bedroom. You know, I've never been in a lockup ward, except in my mind, except in my own home, when I couldn't get out. I couldn't do it. And I called Mike, and here we are at this meeting, you know, and he took me for, I guess that whole week. I heard a murderer speak, Sam Hardy from the desert. He had murdered somebody. He'd been in jail. First criminal murderer I'd ever seen in person. I thought, my mom's not going to like this. Of course, she'd been dead for several years, but I knew she wouldn't like it. And he couldn't take me on Saturday night, so I couldn't get to the meeting in my own hometown. It was at least a mile and a half from my house, and I couldn't get there by myself. Now you have told me in rooms of AA that not only am I not to drink, I'm not to take any of my get-well stuff either. And so I'm just to be there without anything. Whoa! And my eyes sort of popped open, you know. I'm sort of like holding on to myself all the time. So I asked my oldest daughter to go with me. And we went down to this meeting in Woodland Hills. And we're sitting in the back against the wall, door sort of over to the side of us. And this cat comes to the door. And my daughter says, Mom, that's Mama Kitty. And she came over and jumped up on my lap. She was clean and fluffy and fat and purring. And I'm like, you know, I mean, years later, I have asked my daughter, this is what I say a lot of times in AA, did this really happen? She says, yeah. And this guy from the meeting comes up and he says, oh, you've met our AA cat. Cat comes here every week. So I met Joni that night, my first best AA friend. And if you're a newcomer, I hope you find a first best AA friend. They're absolutely invaluable. She'd been sober a whole month. And, you know, and she could drive. I mean, it was incredible. She drove a convertible that was always parked under a pepper tree. And she didn't know about cleaning it out. So, I mean, you crunched when you sat and stepped into the car, you know. And she couldn't. She would drive to meetings and we'd stop in the middle of the block, you know. I mean, and I'd ask her, why are we stopping? And she'd like, oh, she didn't know. I mean, when I think about it, it's sort of terrifying, but. And I kept going to that Saturday night meeting. Joni'd come by and pick me up, and I don't know how long Mama Kitty came, but she'd come every Saturday night, and she'd hop up on my lap and give me a little purr, and I'd give her a little pet, and then she'd disappear again. And somewhere along the line, Mama Kitty stopped coming, and I never have. I went to that meeting for the almost 3 years that I lived in Woodland Hills sober. I've not had another drink nor another mind-altering drug since I've been sober. But like I said, I couldn't throw those pills away. I just had a really hard time with that. My first sponsor, I've had 8 sponsors in my sobriety. And my first sponsor, you know, I was really intense, really intense. And my first sponsor knew Jin Jiu-Jitsu. She used to poke me here and poke me here, and I'd sort of relax, you know. obviously, in 36 years, in 10 minutes, I can't tell you what wonderful, wonderful women have helped me. I didn't want their help, thank you very much, in the beginning. I wanted a man. Obviously, I needed someone to help me take care of my children. You know, mind you, at home, I'm a screaming, yelling bitch. But when I come to AA, I'm... Actually, I'm more like this, because I wore push-up bras and, shirts that never quite buttoned and really tight pants and lace-up boots and, you know... You'd light my cigarette and my head would wiggle like this, you know, and... I was just so adorable, so fetching, so like, and desperate. At 3 months sober, I found, you know, my first, like, hostage kind of person. And he, you know, he liked, he was obsessed about sex, and I'm a dumped woman, you know, and he sort of helped me get through that crisis in my life, shall we say. But he wasn't the least bit interested in love and marriage or my children, you know, and he had the strangest effect when he would leave me after we'd gone for dinner and bed or bed and dinner, you know. He would just leave. Every part of him left. There wasn't an emotional connection. Oh, it was strange. So I kept my eyes open, and when I was about a year and a half sober, I met him with a station wagon, and, you know, he liked kids, and he had kids, and I had kids, but he was crazy. You know, he was only 6 months sober. I didn't hear this year thing. I don't think I heard that. Anyway, we had near disaster, and but because of this man, who died a couple of years ago, but stayed sober. He stayed sober too, and he moved me down to North San Diego County from the San Fernando Valley, and I'm very grateful for that. Our relationship lasted about 10 minutes after we got together down here, but you know, I was here, and this is where I met. I sponsor a woman named Shirley, whom I just love and who is here tonight. But my sponsor's name was Shirley when I, Wanda was first. Wanda was crazier than me. But then Shirley took me under her wing, and she was one of the founders of the Carlsbad AA Workshop, which is now my home group. And Shirley took me through the rest. I'd done a lot of four-step writing, all about them. And Shirley took me through the four-step the way it was supposed to be, and where I had to look at my part. And then we went through the rest of the steps, and Shirley gave me a sense of myself, the very beginning sense of myself. And I think I was close to 10 years sober when Shirley died. And it was so difficult to find another sponsor, but obviously I have. And I've had several sponsors, and all women that have brought some very significant message to me that they have had found in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor today is a woman named Ann G. from Rancho Bernardo, and she is so unlike me. She's very, very bright and reads a lot and thinks a lot different than I do. We don't think at all alike. We love this program. We have this program in common, and it is the thing that keeps us connected. And whenever I need an answer or want a suggestion, I know it's going to be something that I can't think of for myself in my own head, and that's what I still seek. It's not. I have more confidence in my decision-making today because my sponsors have taught me how to make better decisions. But there are things that I hope I never outgrow being teachable, and there are things that Anne can still teach me and that I am eager to learn. And we're both sort of in a place now where our relationship has really grown. When I was, I think, 4 years sober, I met Ken. And it's not all a pretty story. We did some things. He was separated from his wife. Okay, he had moved out, but he wasn't quite divorced. It's not the ideal situation in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we paid some price for that. But Ken and I went together for a long time. He finally asked me to marry him. Finally. I mean, I told him I wasn't going to live like this forever. And when I did, I asked Shirley if I could say that. She says, "You must." I went back to her and said, "He didn't say anything. Nothing. He didn't say, he just said nothing, you know." And I'm like, "Oh, my God." And anyway, obviously, it happened. And the day he asked me to marry him happened to be on a Friday, poor guy. And we had this great meeting up in Oceanside on Friday, sort of like a lot of couples went. And I went and told all the couples that Kenny had asked me to marry him. And he was just like, "Oh, God." So we've had trials and tribulations, and we've been married now almost 29 years. And we're just really lucky. We are really lucky. We aren't a perfect marriage, but we are a workable marriage because we both have sponsors. And he did just go through the steps again. I was really happy for him. Don't tell him, Shirley. He's getting his hearing aids next week. You know, the thing about a marriage that I think is the most important quantity that you have to have, and that is love. You know, I am not a perfect person. Damn close, but he's not either. In those times when we're not, like, feeling this great love for one another, somewhere in the back of the mind, I remember, you know what? You love him. You'll go through the trials because I love him. I want you to know about my kids for just a minute, too, because everybody who's ever heard me knows how proud I am of my children. All of my children survived me, and that's incredible. I'm going to start with the youngest. The youngest one is doesn't care for me very much. He just doesn't. He's tried. We've both tried. And he's the only one that lives close. He lives in Carlsbad, and he's an engineer, and we think he still has a job and is very successful. Lives in a gorgeous home, and has a wife and two children. And we're not close. But we, and he can't say he loves me, but I can say I love him. So we have that relationship. My youngest daughter is 21 years sober. And in her 21 years, she's become a family practice physician, and she lives up in up near Sacramento in Folsom, not the prison. Whenever she comes to a meeting and says, "I'm Ann, I'm from Folsom," all the men's heads go like this. And we are very, very close because we share this program. We are a lot alike. We have personalities that are very much alike, and I am so blessed. I got to go with her to Cambodia when she adopted a son over there, and you know, we just experienced a lot of wonderful things in life sober. My oldest son is also an engineer at the National Lab up in Livermore, and he has a wife and two children, and I'm going to make this a little rosier than it is. He loves me. He can say that to me. But you know, when men marry, they take on their wife in that family, especially when they don't live very close. But I know he loves me, and we talk frequently, and we have long, great conversations, and I feel like we have a good relationship. My oldest daughter is the star. She's not any brighter, I don't think, than any of the rest. But she's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, and she's has so many incredible awards this year since she got the Pulitzer last year, and our relationship has gotten better because I finally have been able to talk to her about my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. She tells me about all the things she does. You know, I mean, it's surreal. Her life is absolutely surreal, and she will be telling me about it in a very humbling way. And then all of a sudden she said, "Well, how are things with you, Mom?" Well, I haven't been talking to the Secretary of Defense. <You know? laughs> But I've got a really good friend, several women in AA that we talk about Alcoholics Anonymous with. But for years I didn't do that. And now I share with her because my life is so full. I sponsor a lot of women. We have a meeting every month of the women that I sponsor, and they have a great community within themselves. It sounds exclusive, and in its own way it is, but it's not an AA meeting. And a lot of them are sick right now. And I am able to be there for them. We are all on a spiritual journey together. And we all have a God in our life, and we all have these steps. We've done these steps twice in the last couple of years as a group, one a week, committed. And it has been a marvelous experience for me as well as the women I sponsor. And so my life is incredibly full, just incredibly full. And it is because I've kept coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and listened to your message. Sometimes I get really sick and tired of it, but I've never quit. Sometimes you say it in a way that I've never heard it said before, and I like that. If you don't get too clever, I go crazy. I haven't quoted the book once tonight, but I love people who do that. I'm not particularly a quoter of the book. I just hope to God I've learned how to live what that book talks about. So once again, I'd like to thank you for asking me to be here, Terry, and thank you all for being here.